most powerful forces of good ever assembled. These are the Super Friends.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Let's go, Bob.
Up, up, and away!
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. Anyone? Emerson, Lake, and Palmer? 1973?
You're so old.
No one? Fine. Well,
negative five.
Welcome back to the Geek Legacy Comic Corner, you bunch of no musical taste having sons of bitches. I'm your host, Jeff Muller, and I'm joined by Geek Legacy's managing editor for all things comics, the Joffrey Baratheon to, well, anyone, because the guy's kind of a dick, Tyler Waterman. What's going on, man? How's life?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm a little bit surprised tonight, but I'm good.
Yeah, well, I think we're all surprised, so let's just dive right into it. Normally, we lead off with news, and there has been a massive disturbance in the force tonight, it seems. One so immense that it's brought out our editor-in-chief, Dave Edmondson, and our executive editor, Justin Cavender, out of hiding and here into the Jerd Cave to talk it through. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Since I'm still in shock a little bit, you guys want to lead off with what's so big and happening right now?
Well, as we all know, Man of Steel was a huge success. Zack Snyder brought Superman to the forefront. And at Comic-Con, he revealed that he was going to be bringing Batman into the fold for the sequel to Man of Steel, assumably Man of Steel 2. And so everyone was wondering who's going to be Batman, who's going to be Batman, who's going to be Batman. There's been a lot of rumors and speculation, but today Warner Brothers announced that it's going to be, drumroll please, Ben Affleck. So Ben Affleck, 2003's Daredevil, is going to play the Caped Crusader in 2015's Man of Steel 2, Batman versus Superman.
I'm okay with this.
I'm good with it. The internet doesn't seem to be, though.
No.
I don't even remember the last time I saw the internet explode this hard, this fast, no pun intended. Like, this is ridiculous.
It's pretty crazy. Twitter exploded in a hate bomb.
I was just going to say, I got, like, probably, like, 40 texts in the last, like, hour. Like, is it true? Is it true?
Well, that's the question. Is it true?
It came directly from Warner Brothers, same people who send me all the other requests and info and screening requests and stuff. So I mean, it came from the same person. So it came from an at Warner Brothers email address.
That's, you know, what would have been cool? It would have been awesome if at the Warner Brothers lot they would have fired up like a bat signal into the sky, but it was just Affleck's face up on the glass. That would have been awesome.
What's weird is they had already made it. They didn't even make it for this movie. They just had that for some reason.
He has it in his house, and he just lent it to him.
We need to borrow this for a minute.
From the Geely and Jersey Girl days.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the internet is falling all over itself to hate it because either A, they say Daredevil sucked, or B, they just say I hate Ben Affleck. And I don't – I'm not really on board with this per se, but I don't hate it for that reason. He's a great actor. There's no – you can't take that away from him unless you've only watched maybe like his first two movies. So he's going to bring good chops. The problem that I have with it is that I would have rather it been someone who wasn't such a household name. You know, I didn't want it to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. It doesn't have to be a guy you've never seen, but it would have been nice to not be someone I won't be able to stop recognizing even in the cape and cowl.
Yeah, but you know, no one had that problem with Christian Bale as Batman. So why is it a problem with Affleck?
I don't think he was someone with a household name. Yeah.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
In 2005, I mean, the only real super mega like following that he had was from American Psycho,
which wasn't that big. I mean, it was Die Hard, but it wasn't that huge. He wasn't a guy a lot of folks said, who is that? And I mean, your response was the guy from American Psycho or the guy from Shaft. Like, it wasn't
right.
He wasn't exact. He's not as household then as he was now. Whereas Ben Affleck, you're not gonna find anyone who doesn't know Ben Affleck.
Right. True. All right,
I have a confession to make. The very first time I ever saw Christian Bale in a movie was Batman Begins. I didn't see American Psycho till years later.
You didn't see The Machinist? You didn't see Terminator?
Nope.
Whatever it was?
Well, Salvation was after.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, Salvation was after.
Yep. All he had was Newsies. He had Newsies and
Empire of the Sun.
Well, yeah, that too. I guess he was a kid.
Oh, Reign of Fire.
Oh, I take that back.
Good pull.
Strike that. I saw Rain of Fire, the worst movie of all time.
that was a pretty ridiculous movie. But we're getting off the topic.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's definitely not as big of a deal as the internet is making it, but it's definitely a really big surprise and a really random thing to drop in the middle of the night on a random Thursday. It's very strange.
I don't know. I'm actually excited for it. I think Affleck's going to knock it out of the proverbial park with this one. I really think he has the chops to pull it off, and he's an avid comic book fan himself, which I always appreciate when people go into these movies as fans of the source material. I always think it makes for a better end product. I mean, yes, people piss all over Daredevil, but I don't think that was Affleck's fault. That was just a crappy script. I think he did fine in it. For what he had to work with.
That movie wasn't his fault. That I will give you that. That movie would have been doomed no matter who was Daredevil.
Right. I don't know. I'm excited.
Me too. I think he's going to make a great Bruce Wayne, and I think he'll make an awesome Batman. And remember, everyone was all freaking out when we found out Heath Ledger was going to be Joker, and that just became the greatest thing ever. So.
Yeah, I mean, I said the same thing. You can't. The one thing you have to give him is he'll bring everything to this role. You know that this is going to be the thing he has wanted to be more than any of the other things he's gotten to be. So you'll know it'll have the chops at least, and I'm sure it'll be fun to watch. It's not going to take anything away from the movie.
No.
I just can't get out of my... The first time we're going to see him in the cowl and he's going to be doing some voice, and it's just... I just have a feeling he's just going to take me out of it. Like, you know... that's Affleck. You know, he's cool, but I just don't see him as Batman. But we'll see.
It's funny because I almost worry about that more with him as Bruce Wayne. I'm going to be expecting him to talk with a Southie accent and like maybe be a bad guy, but maybe be the good guy. But he's also a cop. You know, like I don't. It's going to be weird to see that face and have it not be who I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, they'd said they wanted kind of an older Bruce Wayne, and you know, Affleck's about 10 years older than Cavill. So, I mean, the age difference is there, but Affleck's still kind of a pretty boy, which I guess, you know, Bruce Wayne has to be.
Right.
Because when they started making comparisons that they wanted the relationship to be how it was in the Dark Knight Returns graphic novels, you know, I just couldn't get old, grizzled Bruce Wayne out of my head. And this isn't what I expected, so I think I'm just kind of in shock.
No, I mean, if he's been cast to be a Frank Miller Batman, that's... We've made a serious mistake.
Well, Zack Snyder said when they, you know, previewed this at Comic-Con, he said that they're not going to be following that story. They're just going to be drawing elements from it. So it's not as if we're expecting to see, you know, the fourth issue of Dark Knight Returns here. So I'm not too shocked. I don't know.
Yeah, he was more talking like the character tone, like the relationship between Batman and Superman, not story-wise, but when you draw comparisons to such like an iconic graphic novel, it's hard not to be surprised when he says Dark Knight Returns and now you got Affleck.
Right. I think I just keep thinking like World's Finest, where it's all like just that early era where it's all nice and happy and look at how cool Batman is standing next to Superman. And I think that Ben Affleck could do that easily. Because like you said, he has that clean cut look, and I don't know. I think it'll work.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. It's better than a lot of the other casting choices that have been bandied around for the last week. You know, we've heard all sorts of names. You know, the one that got me the most was when someone was saying Orlando Bloom was the front runner, and my brain just shut down for a couple minutes.
Yeah, that would have been ridiculous. And I like Orlando Bloom, but that would have been ridiculous.
I like him with pointy ears and a bow and arrow.
He would have had pointy ears. He'd had the Batman ears.
Right. Yeah. They would have been black, though. They need to be like beautiful elvish white.
Well, so I mean, that's the big story of the night, which, like we said, it's odd it came out on a Thursday, but man, internet, calm down. It'll all be okay.
Yeah, internet, take should calm down. He obviously auditioned. He obviously couldn't have looked ridiculous. You know, I'm sure whatever. I don't know. It's not going to be the end of the world. It is definitely a surprise, and I'm not sure. It might not pan out. It has the chance to not pan out, but we have to give it at least the benefit of the doubt at this point.
Right. And we don't have long to wait either. I mean, they're talking July 17th, 2015.
I know. It's pretty great, actually. I love that at least it confirms that this movie really is moving as fast as they said it would.
yeah, they're not dragging their feet. They needed a Batman. They found a Batman. Done. Yeah. Now if they could just talk this Batman into directing it, we'll be set.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't miss an opportunity to take a slam at Zack Snyder.
Dave.
You did
Dave.
Really good, though. You got really far.
This is a pro Zack Snyder podcast, sir.
Oh, I love Sucker Punch.
Oh, Jesus. Well, on that note...
You're going to hang up on us?
I am. I'm going to kick you guys off my podcast now because this is unacceptable.
Well, thanks for having us on.
No, thanks for coming up, guys. Stopping in and dropping the Affleck bomb on us.
This was an internet emergency of the highest order.
It was. I actually had to grab my red phone to call Dave and say, hey, we need to have an emergency podcast. Make it happen.
He's like, to the internet.
Yeah, it was intense. Yeah,
I feel the tubes collapsing.
Cool, guys. Well, you have a fantastic evening and can't wait to hear the show.
Thanks, right, guys.
Bye, guys.
See ya. Well, so the big story, if you can call it that, that we wanted to talk about happened about a week ago, and it too set the internet in all sorts of a tizzy, even though the story is really like 25 years old. I don't know. This book came out in 1988, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, I'm talking about The Killing Joke by Alan Moore and Brian Boland. One of my all-time favorite Batman stories, hands down. Definite top five.
Oh, yeah.
So for those who haven't paid any attention to the internet shitstorm that got kicked up last week over this book, here's what happened. Grant Morrison was on Kevin Smith's podcast, Fat Man on Batman. And they were discussing Grant's upcoming work now that he's done with Batman, et cetera, et cetera. And they were discussing his all-time favorite Batman stories. And they somehow meandered over to The Killing Joke. And Grant explained to Kevin that at the end of the book, spoilers here, Batman kills the
25-year-old
Joker.
25-year-old spoilers.
I know. Well, you gotta say it, because there's going to be one guy who's like, oh my God, I hadn't read it yet. It was on my to-do list for the last 20 years. Anyway, at the end of it, Batman kills the Joker in the last panels. And that was the point of the title of the book. Now, for those of you that haven't read it, shame on you. Seriously. It's an iconic piece of Batman literature. It was a one-shot book. And in this book, the Joker shoots Barbara Gordon, leaving her paralyzed, tortures the living crap out of Jim Gordon. And in the end, when Batman apprehends him, he tells him this really corny joke as they await the police. And Batman actually cracks a smile and starts laughing. And then he reaches out. You know what? How about I just play you a minute of the footage from that podcast as Grant Morrison explains it much better than I ever would.
We talk about this, no one gets the end. Batman kills the Joker. That's why it's called The Killing Joke. The Joker tells The Killing Joke at the end. Batman reaches out and breaks his neck, and that's why the laughter stops and then the light goes out, because that was their last chance at crossing that bridge. And Alan Moore wrote the ultimate Batman Joker story, finished it.
Out of here.
Yeah, but he did it in such a way that it's ambiguous, so people will never have to be sure, which means it doesn't have to be the last Batman Joker story. It's brilliant. It's like... they're laughing and Batman reaches out, grabs his neck and breaks it, and the laughter stops. It actually abruptly stops, which tells you he's just reached out and killed him. It's really obvious if you look back at it.
So the only thing that's missing is a quirk or something like that, a sound, a little onomatopoeia.
Yeah, but that would have made it too obvious. And I'm sure that Alan Moore wanted to make it, this is the last Batman Joker story, this is the inevitable end, this is the killing joke. It says it in the title. But...
I've been reading that book for years. I never saw that.
If you look at it again, it's the most obvious thing in the world. And then the light switches because he's just killed him. It's like there's no chance of them crossing that bridge anymore. And it's what makes it the ultimate Batman Joker story.
Dude, third-eyed me and fucking shattered my world. Like that. That changes the framework from which I viewed that story forever. And I loved Killing Joker.
It makes the whole book so much better.
Yeah, it elevated it.
It's the finale. It's the end. It's, of course it has to be the end. He's just crippled.
Alan Moore secretly wrote the last Batman story.
Of course he did.
So, first off, man, I could listen to Grant Morrison read the phone book. I want to hire him to narrate my life at some point. Jesus.
You should just do GPSs now.
Oh, my God. That would be the greatest thing ever. The Grant Morrison TomTom. Holy crap. Oh, I'd buy that. Anyway, so as you heard, Kevin seemed blown away by this point of view. And I just attributed that to him being as high as fuck all or something. But the internet went mental over this. It was like a massive revelation. And I didn't quite get it. I have my thoughts on this, but what do you think about this, Tyler? You're more of a bat connoisseur than I am. Where do you stand on this?
Well, it was an ending that I saw when I read it the first time, and I kind of took that with a grain of salt, the same way that you take, you know, Dark Knight Returns with a grain of salt. Like, it's not necessarily canon. It right. sort of is, it sort of isn't. And with Killing Joke, it's the line is harder to see because of Barbara Gordon, and because that does come over, you can't. It's hard for people to think that it's not canon. But I always looked at it as you could interpret it that way, but that wasn't the ending. That's not really what happened, because I really fear the day when we get the official, and you know it'll happen. Someday it's going to happen where Batman's going to kill somebody. It's going to happen. That's going to be an event that happens someday. And I dread that day, because it's the only worst line you could cross in comics would be to bring Uncle Ben back. That's like the only more sacrilegious thing you could do. Is it's basically, number one, resurrect Uncle Ben. Number two, have Batman kill a guy. And I mean, you can make their arguments for times where he has, but sure. You get my point.
Right.
And I've always kind of chalked that ending up, and I'm not hating, but more, I mean, go read any interview with the guy. Like, go look at anything he's ever, the guy's kind of a douche, and he's very set in his ways, and he's going to tell whatever story he wants, regardless of whether it's appropriate or whether or not it fits or whatnot. And I respect the hell out of him for that, because without that attitude, we wouldn't have things like Watchmen, which means comics would still be, you know, bam, pow, biff. But at the same time, it doesn't mean the guy, everything you do is right. And so I don't know. I don't like that ending. So I refuse to accept that ending. And I think that everybody acting like it was the most obvious ending now is a little bit fake.
I don't know, man. See, I didn't realize this was a thing. So many people on Twitter and forums and whatnot got all up in arms about it. You know,
yeah.
And even tons of news sites picked up on this. I mean, it was crazy how many articles about a 25-year-old book showed up. I was just kind of shocked, and I kept seeing people yell things like, "How dare you try and explain another creator's work, Morrison, you pompous ass," and "Batman would never kill, rage, rage, rage."
Yeah.
Yeah. But I always read it that way, though. I literally thought that was the common interpretation of that book. I remember when it came out, I was working at my local comic book store. It was a one-shot, and it came out at the time where there were a million one-shots. They were never considered canon. They weren't in continuity. They were just like, hey, here's a cool story.
All the Elseworld stuff.
Yeah. And all the customers and my friends, we all discussed it. And I really can only remember one guy who wanted to argue the contrary. And of course, we beat him down in some form of, you know, nerd peer pressure. I mean, otherwise, it was pretty unanimous to us all that Batman snapped and went Joker on the Joker, which is what made the book so damn good to us. It was like, man, there's a different take. The Joker broke Batman, and then Batman broke the Joker. I don't know. I was shocked at the anger that came out about a book that's really so old. I mean, half the people arguing about it weren't around when it came out the first time like I was. I guarantee you that much. And maybe when you read it after the fact and you look at things like Barbara Gordon ended up paralyzed, things that they did bring over into mainstream continuity from what was a non-canon one-shot book, maybe you view it from a different point of view. But back then, I could have sworn that was the way everyone read it. I mean, obviously not, because, you know, there's Kevin Smith going, "Oh my God, brain exploded." But man, I don't know. It just shocked me this was a thing now.
I know. No, I agree with you, man. I agree with you.
Well, I mean, so that's it for the news. A lot of uprisings in the last 2 weeks in the Batverse. Unfortunately, not much else going on, is there?
No, I mean, well, all the events are underway right now, which will kind of tie into a lot of the things we talk about in our reviews. So the events are the news themselves. Right now, the comics are the news. You know, that's what the headline comes from. It's really just about, what, oh my God, did you just see that happen? Whatever may be at that given week.
And this week, actually, when we get to my reviews, is poop. So that sound is appropriate.
See. See.
Well, before we get to those reviews, I want to recap our rating system. I realize we haven't done that in a couple issues for our listeners.
Oh, good idea.
So we here at the Comics Corner, we follow a highly scientific method.
Very scientific.
Very. I don't want to confuse you all with the immensely complicated formulas we use to arrive at our ratings. Just know that I rate my titles on a 5-gold-star system, 5 being the pinnacle of comic excellence, and 1 being books that look like your 8-year-old nephew created them, or mostly anything by Dynamite Comics. Tyler, what's your rating system?
I go 1 through 5 is just, it's too constraining. So I go 1 through 10, and it will always be 1 through 10, something that relates to the books, which may not make sense to you right now, but will when you listen to one of my reviews in 5 minutes.
Hopefully it makes sense to the listeners, because half the time I have no idea what you're talking about.
Because read all the wrong books.
Oh, here we go. All right, well, let's start off with a book that I think we can both agree on. At least I hope we do.
I doubt it.
I think we do, and I keep heaping praise on Nova every few podcasts because I think it's the book I would recommend to anyone that wanted to start reading comics. I think it's the perfect gateway drug, so to speak.
I agree. Wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I mean, we're on issue 7 now, and it's just as fun as it was in issue 1. Even though we had a talent change two issues back?
I think so, yeah.
It hasn't really changed direction. Zeb Wells and Paco Medina, they picked everything up in stride and are doing really well crafting what's just a fun book. It's been a long time since we've had a new teenager discovering their powers in a book that wasn't all broody and angst-ridden.
Alpha.
Well, I mean, just that so many books are all, oh, life sucks, whether it's Avengers Arena or Young Avengers or anything else, where, oh, the world is mean to me. Nova is just... wow, this is cool. I can fly, which is what a teenager would be like. How awesome would that be? And this book just gets it right. It's a pleasure to read. It doesn't take itself too seriously, even when it's tying itself into very serious events such as AVX or Infinity. And it's a genuine comic book in both form and function as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to give this issue 4.5 gold jerd stars. It was fun. It was easily accessible. The art is a home run. And the depiction of Doc Ock Spidey this issue was so good. It was hilarious. Make sure you give this book a try. I promise you won't be disappointed. I mean, you read this book, right, Tyler?
I love this book. This is, it's like one of the ones that you read first when it's that week. It's just, it's such a good book. And this is a great, this issue, this comic is so good because it's everything about it hits. You know, there's no, that's not like one, a lot of books, it's, the art's okay, but the writing is great, or vice versa, or there's something about it you don't like. This isn't one of them. There's nothing you could find that's bad about this book, and it just gets better every week or every month.
It does. And see, we can agree on something.
I know, right? It can happen.
It's possible.
Nova is that good.
Nova brings people together. It bridges the gap. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, we touched on events a little bit, so I'll talk about what's happening over in the DC world.
Okay.
Obviously, we're fully underway with Trinity War coming up on right now on the cusp of Villains Month. And so the most recent segment, it's 5 of 6, which hats off to this event for legitimately, you really only need to read these 6 books. That's it. There are some stupid tie-ins when the Trinity of Sin characters, I'm not reading them, and I clearly, I read one issue of Pandora, and it was terrible, and I, no thank you. But this one was Justice League Dark, number 23. It's part 5 of 6, so we're about to get there. And this event is doing a lot of things right. For one, is putting it all together and within 6 books. It's very much, there's a clear problem, and it's clear what we're doing to stop it, and it's clearly not working. You know, it's the classic event formula. And some of the scenes are great. I particularly loved in this issue, did you read this book?
I did.
Okay. Really, the whole point of this entire issue is essentially just a jamboree where the skull is flipping all the way through the air, and everybody who grabs it goes evil. Except it lands in John Constantine's hands, and he's just like, that's another day. Just that unfazed reaction where it corrupts the uncorruptible. I mean, Superman, Wonder Woman, we're talking Shazam, we're talking the best of the best, instantly are made its bitch. This dude just gets it, and it's just like, I'm already that terrible. What are you trying to do, silly box? I don't know. I thought that was great. That being said, boy, the writing is on the wall that they were like, we want to do Villains Month. How do we get there? This story is so generic.
Bad? Is that the word you were going to use? Bad?
It's not bad, but you can't fault generic as bad. It's cliches are cliches for a reason. They're popular. You know, this is an action-packed, punch-filled, guest star-laden, action movie of an event. And that's fine, and which is why it's nice that it's 6 issues and not 19 issues, because it's not deep enough for that. And a lot of comic events are not deep enough and still do that. But at the same time, it's just so obviously just thrown up. The ending is clear. It has been the whole time. And it's all just a setup for another thing. And it's another thing that, I'll be honest, I don't know. I personally, I'm not that excited for. So, I don't know. It is what it is. I'm enjoying reading it. I look forward to when we have another part.
Really?
Because it's a popcorn flick.
It's not, though. It's not. I'm going to use your own words.
All right,
there's clearly a problem, and it's clearly not working. Those two phrases came out of your mouth, and I'm turning them right around. This book is this event is clearly a problem, and it clearly isn't working. At least it's not for me. I don't know. I love Jeff Lemire.
I know you do.
I love him. He sucks on this book right now. Just like Geoff Johns is sucking the life out of Justice League. It's so deadpan. This is like you took a A-level script and you gave it to soap opera actors to act out. It's just everything is falling flat for me. I want to enjoy it. I want to eat that popcorn. I want to go, oh, look, superheroes punching yourself in the face. And then dialogue happens. And I immediately go, oh, Christ, really? I mean, I don't know what it is exactly about this event that's rubbing me wrong. I want to love it. I love the Justice League. I love DC events. And God, I can't get through it. It kills me every issue. I don't know, man.
Are you looking forward to Villains Month and Forever Evil at all?
I'm looking forward to a couple specific issues from Villains Month.
Yeah.
I want to read the Dark Side issue. There's probably about 3 or 4 that I'm like, I want to read that. And the rest of them, I'm going to ignore. But I think that's kind of cool about that event, is you could pick the villains you like and you grab a couple and you read them. And then you wait for the reviews to come out. And if someone else says, hey, this is a great one over here, you can grab it. I mean, that's not a bad way to approach it. And I don't mind that. But Trinity War is just, there's no fun. There's no joy in it for me. I don't know.
It's very lifeless. It's action packed, but it's lifeless. It's expendable. You know, it's. It's a diehard movie. You're not gonna walk out and break it apart and go, what do you think he was feeling in this moment? But you are gonna walk out and go, that time when that helicopter crashed into that space shuttle, that was really cool. It's that kind of thrill.
I guess.
But you're right. I mean, I don't fault you for not being into it. It is a book that if I had to buy 20 things to read, I would not be buying 20 things to read. I'll put it that way.
No.
Well, so the moral of the story is I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 trench coats. It is what it is. And I'm not going to fault a book for being what it is, but it's not a book just being what it is nothing more than average. And 6 is average. So
fair enough.
It is what it is.
All right. Well, here's where I'm going to move on to my next book. And here's where I'm going to attract some internet hate.
You're so good at that.
I am. I want to talk about the Red Sonja digital exclusive title by Gail Simone and Walter Giovanni. And I don't want to talk about it in a positive light. I wanted to like this book. I like Gail Simone usually. I like the high fantasy genre. And I love the Conan universe. So I should be all sorts of stoked about this title. Like most of the interwebs is. But I have to be honest here, it's not very good. It's not horrible, it's just ugh. I mean, that's my overall impression, it's just blech. The first issue is decent, the art was a little weak, but the story was interesting, and it had enough hooks to get me to come back for issue number 2. Which is a big feat, actually, considering this is a Dynamite comic, and we all know that my therapist has told me, stay away from their titles, so I don't have an aneurysm and drop dead ranting about how shitty they are. I should have listened. Issue 2 has come, and I'm already dropping the book. I just can't do it. It was straight up bad. The story was weak and generic. The characterizations were blah. The art continued to be mediocre at best. I caution anyone who's thinking about picking this up because of all the hype. I really think this is a case of Simone fangirlism overriding people's sensibilities. I don't know. If anyone else was thinking about picking this up, I honestly would tell you don't. I think if anyone else was writing this, the critics would have dismissed it already. But because She Who Can Do No Wrong is behind it, it's getting a lot of praise. And I think that's a disservice to the readers out there. If a book isn't good, it's okay to say so. This isn't a comment on Gail herself, who I adore, or any of her other works. You know, I like mostly. It's this particular book just isn't good. And I'm going to give it 2 tarnished Gerd stars and recommend the readers avoid it. If you want cool Hyborian stories, look to Brian Wood's fantastic run on Conan instead. That's awesome. This Red Sonja is not awesome at all. Did you try this?
No, I didn't. I knew, I don't know. You can always sense when a book is getting praise because of where it came from and not what it stands on, because you see of all sorts of people falling all over themselves to tell you how great it was, but none of them tell you why. They just say it was great. No one ever has a specific, you know, thinking about last week with Infinity and everybody tweeting about it, and everybody was tweeting, I loved blah, or I can't stand when this happened. It was always about events and everything about this book was, it's really great, CC Gail Simone. You know, like, it's really great. Notice me saying great things about your book, but I don't even know that all of them even read it. Yeah, it's... Yep. So it is what it is. Now, having said that, I didn't read it, so I can't personally say whether or not what you have is accurate.
Don't.
But I trust your judgment, and I know.
Wait,
the
hold
thing
on.
Is,
what?
I know. It's
say
hard
that
to
again
believe,
for me.
But I do trust your judgment.
Oh my God, I'm going to touch myself later.
That to yourself.
Oh, I am. I'm going to pleasure myself to that on a loop.
And the thing is, I know you're a fan of hers, and I am too. So I know you went into this expecting to like it, and the fact that you didn't. I know that you gave this more than it's shot, and I have a feeling I don't need to.
No.
I'm pretty good on that. It's too bad, too, because the movie is great.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. All right. Well, what do you have next?
Well, I actually am going to give you a 2-for-1 here because they're tied directly together. This past week, there was, again, talk about crossovers done right. It was a little bit of a crossover between the Superior Spider-Man and between Scarlet Spider. And this is actually important in the sense that this is the first time that Kane, evil clone of Peter, who's not so evil anymore, met with Peter, who is now obviously Otto Octavius.
Okay.
And it was done great. It was a 2-part story. Both parts came out the same day. So you didn't have to remember to buy a book you wouldn't normally. You don't have to call your comic shop and say, can you pull Scarlet Spider 20? But just 20. I just want that. You know, it's just annoying. They come out right on the same shelf right next to each other. Now, here's the thing. I was really looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to, there's a lot of these coming up right now. Spider-Man 2099 is showing up next, Superior Spider-Man. Ben Reilly appears to be coming back. Like, all the spiders are coming together, which is obviously going to be important. Jackal is back. That's never good. Green Goblin is back. That's never good. So shit's about to hit the fan. Here is my problem with this.
Uh-oh.
And you know, especially recently, I have really started to mark out for Superior Spider-Man everything. I just, the product has really hit full stride. I really love where it's come.
Right.
I'm a big, big fan of this. This was really out of character for everything that's been built so far, and it really stood out. It was hard to ignore because it's the whole premise of the whole thing, in the sense that Otto, even though he's not burdened with Peter's memories anymore, he still very much tries to maintain the facade. And in this, instead of, even though he understands that Peter clearly had a good relationship, or at least a decent relationship with this guy, he remembers that, yes, Kane did kill him at one point. And he just lashes out at him and is yelling things that don't even make sense. I mean, this guy protects the secret of who he really is so fiercely. For him to be yelling, you didn't have anything with him. You're talking about him. This is me. Like, it was like it was written by someone who hadn't been reading any of the actual book, and it really hurt it. Otherwise, it was a really cool story, and it was fun to watch the team up. But it really suffered from a really strange character where it ends with him being like, F you, I'm out. Like, you're a dirty clone and I hate you. And he, like, basically stomps out. Like, that's the end of it. And at the end, it basically turns Kane evil. And it was clear that they wanted to do this with Kane. And this was what they used to do it, and it didn't fit. It was, you know, round plug in a square hole. I don't know. It was kind of a letdown. Hmm. All in all, I'm going to give it 5 webs. I don't even want to get that creative with it because wow. And I was really bummed because I was really looking forward to this. And it just wasn't what I was looking forward to. I'm hoping now, I'm a little cautious. I was really looking forward to 2099 showing up, and now I'm worried it's going to be more of that as well. And I don't want to see him break the character. It doesn't make sense, because if the more people he gets talking, the worse it's going to be for him. So Otto is not stupid enough to do this. Why is he doing it? I don't know. Other folks might disagree, but that was my interpretation of it, and it left a sour taste in my mouth.
All right. Well, man, sorry to hear that. I know how much you like those books.
I do. I really do. I still have faith, but this one was a little bit... Just this one story was kind of a bummer.
Right. All right. Well, we've talked one event, the DC event. Mm-hmm. There is another event, though, that's happening now on the Marvel side of the house. That might be a little bit better than Trinity War. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the way that Infinity has kicked off pretty much is exactly how you do a crossover event compared to what's happening in DC right now, which I don't want to talk about anymore. So Infinity's here, and man, it announced itself with a stellar slap to comic readers' faces. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start talking about it.
First of all, don't you feel like that comic was 100 pages long?
Well, and we're going to talk about this later. The digital download of it was actually 120-something pages because it included another comic. I opened it, and I was like, holy crap, Hickman. And then I realized it was really only 55 pages, which still...
Only.
is, and it's 55 pages of fucking awesomeness.
Oh yeah, just
Jesus
joy.
Christ.
Pure comic joy. It was like an action movie, but in a good sense, not in a cheap sense. It was like edge of your seat from cover to cover.
Man, I know we've said it before in the podcast, but I want to continue the chant of All Hail Hickman.
Yep, absolutely.
It was so good. So
you're no wrong.
I literally don't know what to say about this. I mean, we talked last week about how people were going to react to this if they weren't reading Avengers and New Avengers, and I don't know what those people thought of it. I know what I thought of it having read those other books, and I was blown away. I don't know how to put myself in their shoes. I definitely want to hear from some of our listeners who were in that boat. Tyler did an amazing job putting up his refresher on geeklegacy.com to kind of prime people as to what's been happening for the last 18 issues of the Avengers and 10 issues or whatever it is of New Avengers. But I want to hear from the listeners and see how Infinity affected you if you hadn't read those books. But since Tyler and I both have, Tyler, I mean, how do we even want to go into talking about this?
Well, I will say this. I think one of the things that I loved about it so much was it really did a fantastic job of explaining the scale of this. And I think that was one of the things I was worried about the most. Avengers and New Avengers did a really good job of making you realize that Earth is just one little thing, you know, right. Like where you're so used to that being the focus of everything. The scale of this event is so enormous that Avengers, and when Cap has that moment where, you know, where he basically is confronted with the idea that they're just 16 people standing in the room, you know, like they're just a couple of people, yeah, they're just a group. They're not even the most powerful people,
right? The least important in the room,
yeah. Absolutely. It was that I'm really glad, because for the folks who weren't reading those books, I do feel confident that they understand how big this is. That being said, there's a lot of parts that clearly they don't know how awesome Ex Nihilo really is. Like I am so excited that he is an Avenger. I just get so, it's so ridiculous, and I know, you know, it won't last. You know this guy's gonna die.
It's gonna end badly.
He might as well be wearing a red shirt right now. Like it's so obvious what he is, but it doesn't matter because it's just such a unique character to have be there. The dialogue is Hickman at his finest. It feels like you're talking to these people. The artwork is just a joy to behold.
Yeah.
And it really was, there was no part of that that was a lull. It was very good at making you realize, oh my God. But the thing is, man, and even though we're just starting off, I'm already able to ask this question. How the hell do we go, where do we go from here? they always say nothing will be the same, and typically that's not really that true, because some things will be different and one or two people will be dead, but like, it's still, at the end of the day, it's the next thing. This time,
I don't know. There was a point in time where I really enjoyed the cosmic aspect of the Marvel Universe, and that was back in the Claremont Byrne era, back in the late 80s, you know, with the Shi'ar and the Kree and the Skrull and Thanos and all that. I loved it back then, and I got out of comics for a while, and I didn't read Fear Itself. I didn't read, you know, the Skrull Invasions and things
Secret
like
Invasion.
That. Yeah, I didn't read that, and I've been out of it for a while. It was nice seeing all those races come back, but I definitely can see how that portion of the Marvel Universe is fucked. Like, I don't know, man. They've already annihilated hundreds of millions of alien races in the first issue.
Hundreds of billions.
Most importantly, and this is the kind of a dick thing for me to say, I guess, but I don't think anyone should get up and cheer when a group of heroes gets mowed down unceremoniously. But oh my God, I was so happy when Galador just got ripped a new one and disintegrated. Because the Space Knights... I'm sorry, any ROM fans that are out there. The Space Knights were one of the most ridiculous aspects of the Marvel history. And I'm glad they're gone. Although, they went out like champs. They didn't go out like bitches. I'll give them that.
They went out like champs.
I mean, and Hickman wrote them well, and a testament to his writing. You cared about what was happening in those couple of pages where they started this off. But I'm kind of glad they're gone. I don't know. That's one less thing to deal with.
I love how he put him in the character list in the beginning. So you're like, you turn that page and you're like, are they seriously going to be that big of a deal in this event? And within a couple pages, you're like, nope.
No, they've been vaporized. Spoilers.
Yeah, no, that was really good. That was a nice little twist. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's like I said, they always promise everything will be different.
Right.
And it's never true. Well, I mean, no, sometimes it's true. But for the most part, it's only true of Manhattan. You know, it's not true of anything else, you know, bigger than that. This is the entire universe is essentially eating itself. It's collapsing on itself. The people who made it are about to clean it up. And I just, what's going to be left? Earth. That's it. Just Earth. It'll be just Earth.
And what's, we said this last podcast. This is a science fiction story told with superheroes in it. And it became even more clear this issue when, you know, like you said, Captain America's like, we're 16 guys in a room just trying to look out for our own best interest. And then you see the immenseness of the rest of the galaxy. And it's not superheroes. I mean, well, I guess you can call the Shi'ar Royal Guard. It's kind of a superhero team from outer space. But the rest of them, the Kree and the Skrull and everyone else, the Brood, they were talking about them. I mean, it's straight up science fiction, which I think is what Hickman does best, to be honest with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, I'm so into this event. I just want Trinity to end and be done so I can focus on Infinity and how awesome it is.
Now, are you going to buy the tie-ins?
I'm going to buy...
There are a lot of tie-ins.
I'm going to buy some of them. And I think we're doing this right. And I love the Hickman diagram at the beginning of this book that shows you exactly the path this story is going to take, what issue it's going to be, what order to read them in. Because in kind of the times where things get double-shipped, sometimes with these events, you never know, oh, do I read Avengers first or New Avengers first? This is telling you. It's a blessing on so many levels. I'm definitely reading all the main stories, and I'll probably pick up a couple of the crossovers. But I don't think you need to. And again, that's a testament to an event done correctly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could get away with just buying Infinity, Avengers, and New Avengers, and you'd know everything you needed to know. You definitely have to buy Avengers and New Avengers, though. Even if you don't continue after, if you want to be in Infinity, you need to do it. Because Avengers 18 definitely proved that tonight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it definitely did. So, readers, I know there's a lot of people like, screw crossover events. And I'm one of those people. I don't like the big crossovers. I like the little crossovers. But, man, this started off so strong. And while other events in the recent past started off strong as well, this one I can't see faltering. I can't see Hickman losing control of this. I really see this finishing as strong as it starts and setting up the next phase of events that are coming up. And I'm super psyched. I'm going to give this I'm not going to give it a perfect score because you got to reserve those. Once again, I'm going to give it a 4.5-star rating because, man, it was good. What about you?
I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 spaceships. This was almost as good as it gets. It really was. I hope it can maintain this momentum through, and I have unconditional faith it will.
And I have unconditional faith. We're probably going to continue to talk about this book as the event unfolds.
Yeah, probably.
So
I suspect you're right. Yeah.
Well, now that we've rambled on for a while, let's give some listeners some free stuff.
Oh, so, that's my favorite price.
So just a quick refresher. Every issue of the podcast, Tyler and I are giving away 2 free digital comics to loyal listeners who pimp out the show. You can enter to win by doing a couple of simple things. Either share a link to the show with the hashtag GeekLegacyRules on Facebook, Google+, or Twitter, or you can also rate the show on iTunes and make sure to leave your email address in the comments so that I can track you down. Before every show, I toss the eligible people into a randomizer and out pops the lucky person who gets some free crap. So this week, the winner is Twitter user TrexLight. So thanks so much for the support, and I will be in contact with you tomorrow to get you your free comics. So make sure you spread the love, and maybe you're going to win some comics from us too. Now that brings us to the portion of the show where Tyler and I, we yell about stuff. We get angry. We get the nerd rage boiling. And luckily, I don't have any residual nerd rage over Affleckgate. Maybe Tyler does. I'm in a good place tonight. So I'm going to let Tyler go first because I think his rant is going to lead squarely into mine anyway. So
I suspect it will.
So go ahead.
Okay, so Age of Ultron. You'd think we'd be out of reasons to rant about this.
No, it touched us in the bad place. We got to keep airing this out.
You never forget. Age of Ultron, whether you love it or you hate it, and I bet you I can guess, what we all understand the reason it existed. They made it very clear that this was to tie up the loose ends of time travel in the Marvel Universe and to essentially, maybe not necessarily eliminate it, but severely limit it. You were going to set it in stone and make it so you can't. I mean, Tony Stark in Age of Ultron, the creepy future Stark, essentially makes it clear that if you do this one more time, we're never going to be able to do this again.
Right.
So, my friend, can you explain to me why post Age of Ultron, when we are well past Age of Ultron now, Angela is knocking around with the Guardians of the Galaxy, Galactus is munching on the Ultimate Universe. Like, what was done is done. We're out of it continuity wise. How in God's name do we still have so much time travel going on? Well, the whole Hulk comic right now is about time travel. And all of them reference how it's broken, but we're still doing it. I hate it.
I can give you a simple answer. And that answer is Brian Bendis is a dickhole.
But these aren't Bendis.
No, he started it. He set the precedent that all these other writers are following. Because Bendis, when he writes well, is an excellent writer and is pretty much one of the stars of Marvel. So if he does something and he pioneers that path, all the other writers are going to follow on behind him because he's one of the guys waving the flag.
Yeah.
And fuck him for doing it. Man, that event still angers me. And, I don't know.
I'm just so... There's so many other things. Here's the thing about comics is that we as comic fans are willing to accept similar stories ad nauseum because it doesn't take a lot to make us happy with it. But time travel is... It's always the same damn thing, and it's just been used so much. Right? I mean, Fantastic Four is all about time travel. Incredible Hulk is all about time travel. I'm forgetting... All new X-Men, all about time travel. Hell, as much as I don't even want to point a negative word in its general direction, we have time travel in Thor God of Thunder.
Listen, that is its own separate form of time travel.
It's also the most beautiful form.
That was wrapped up gorgeously.
God. We can't even get into that because that'll be a whole podcast.
Oh, my God. I just want to bathe in a sea of Thor comics right now.
My favorite thing that has happened.
Without a doubt. And Bendis had nothing to do with it.
Right, but still time travel was even...
Shush.
So I'm just saying, like, it's okay. I can understand, you know, it's clearly it was done with a reason, and, you know, Battle of the Atom is going to tie into it as well, but it needs to stop. Whatever the reason was, fine. But we need to wrap it up. And if we're going to do events that end, you know, it'd be like House of M. House of M was designed to wrap up how many mutants we gained in the 90s. They will tell you that right to your face, right, that it was designed to curb that, sure, start it over. It would have been like if House of M happened, but in X-Men, there was 200 mutants. But when you read X-Factor, there weren't. You know, in X-Factor, there's 100,000.
Are you saying that perhaps there's a continuity issue over at Marvel?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying, which I feel like is something that has been bothering you lately.
That is shocking, because that may or may not have been exactly what I was going to talk about tonight. So I got hit with some interesting news on Twitter the other day, and I don't know where it came from, so this is all conjecture. I wasn't able to track down the source, but several people that, you know, I banter back and forth about comics pretty regularly about, had mentioned that someone at Marvel had said that Age of Ultron was the catalyst for Infinity. And I about lost my goddamn mind. And here's the problem with it. And I didn't think it was a problem, so I started talking to these people. Just like with Killing Joke, I just assumed that the way I saw things was the way everyone saw them. You know, I'm kind of...
You would.
I'm selfish and narcissistic like that. That's fine, I admit it. I assumed that Age of Ultron, because the first issue starts off with present-day New York City,
right,
meant present goddamn day New York City. And that book came out approximately 7 or 8 issues into Avengers. So all the seeds for Infinity, which had been, you know, started being laid by Hickman in Avengers, came prior to Age of Ultron. So I immediately said, no, there's no way at all. That's crazy talk. And then a bunch of people on Twitter told me, no, Age of Ultron is supposed to come after Fear itself, but before, you know, this event. What? Listen, it's not that hard. And I'm angry, and this is the one piece of the book Nova, which I love, that angers me a little bit, is it's so far out of continuity, it's not even funny. Because the book started after AVX happened, and Nova, as a kid, was in AVX, but yet hadn't found the helmet yet in his own goddamn book. And it shouldn't be this hard. It should not be this difficult to follow. You want to know how to follow a simple continuity? Let's go back to Infinity, and let's look at that pretty little chart that Hickman laid out and said, hey, I'm going to start this here. We're going to be at the end of it here, and here's where everything ties in. It shouldn't be that difficult. And this is the one problem that I continually argue about with Marvel. I've turned into a Marvel Now fanboy. I love it. I hate the way they handle their universe. DC is fucking up left and right, but they still control their universe from a singular point of view and maintain continuity for the most part across all of their books. And I appreciate that because it makes it easy to read. There's no, well, I'm reading this over here. Does this happen before this other book that came out a week? No, it shouldn't. It came out a week after. Therefore, the events happen a week after, unless you tell me otherwise. If it's a flashback issue, I'm fine with it. It's not a problem at all. But you have to assume that books that are coming out months apart, if something comes out 3 months after another story, logic would tell you that it's happening after that original story. I don't know why this is so difficult for Marvel to get their head around. And don't you dare go back and retcon an event as good as Infinity and sully it with that Age of Ultron crap. I swear to God, if that ends up being the case, you're going to have to find a new co-host because my head is going to explode.
It can't, you're right. It can't possibly, I don't care what they say, it can't possibly be tied to Age of Ultron, because I just went issue by issue and marched it all out. Everything that happens in New Avengers and Avengers that was well before that is completely essential to the plot of Infinity. So it was already, I mean, X-Nilo had already sent the origin bombs. Like,
right, but people are saying that Age of Ultron happened long before Avengers started, long before New Avengers started, that this happened a long time ago, and because it was a time travel story told as a miniseries, it could have happened whenever. Fuck that.
Yeah, can we just go to a world where we all pretend Age of Ultron just didn't happen in the first place?
Oh, I swear to God, I'd love that world.
And you know, it's funny, you have a point, and Marvel not only do you have a point, Marvel proves you right, and they prove you right in Nova 7, of all things, when you get that little blurb in the beginning of this where they just straight out flat admit, essentially, he just straight out admits, you know, hey, listen, we have no clue where this goes. I mean, Stephen Wacker, the editor here, has a little blurb that says, the story takes place before Superior Spider-Man 14, but right. takes place after Amazing 700. So Doc Ock is Spider-Man's brain. Let's just say it happens on a recent Thursday and be done with it. And if you continue, curmudgeons are curious, I'm reading it during lunch. Like they're like, how dare you expect us to know where the hell our stories are happening? Why can't we expect that? I think we can expect that.
How long did that come out? How long did the Doc Ock Spidey fiasco happen?
Oh, ages. I mean, 700 came out like around Christmas time.
So why the hell is a book that's supposedly current happening 5 months ago? When's it going to catch up? Are we ever going to know? I don't know. It's so confusing. It's just, I don't know. It drives me nuts, and it's just, of all the great things that Marvel's doing, they are just dropping the ball here, and they're making it really complicated for the readers who read a lot of books and are trying to maintain some semblance of continuity in that universe.
Well, that's why it's a stupid thing to do, because it alienates those of us who buy as many of their books as we can afford, because we want to read everything and don't want it to be spoiled for us. But it also alienates, I'm just getting into comics guy. I mean, how many folks have started talking to us since we did this podcast about where do I get started? I'd love to read comics again. And when someone asks me that question, my initial response is, fuck if I know. You know, like, where do you tell someone to get started on something where the people who work there and write these stories can't tell you where they fit?
Right.
It's just, you know, it's hard. DC is easier to recommend to new comic readers, not because it's better, but because it's more accessible. And that doesn't always mean good things, but if you want to bring people in, sometimes things can intermix.
Sure.
But it needs to be, at least to those of us who are buying this many books, it should be a little bit more obvious.
I agree. It's draining me just talking about it. So let's bring it up a notch. Can we please?
Let's get the positive. We always like to end on a positive note.
We do. Will you cheer me up a little bit? Do you have something that'll bring ray of sunshine into my life?
Let me preview a ray of sunshine with a story about the dead Robin.
I'm glad Damian's dead. That's so true. Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah, this will cheer me right up because I'm a heartless bastard.
So another thing that really had Twitter blowing up yesterday before everything else was Batman and Nightwing number 23. Everybody was talking basically however they phrased it. They all had the same tweet. Ow, my feels. It was all of these stories. Obviously, this started with the silent issue with no words and just Batman lamenting Bruce. And every issue since has followed pretty much the same formula. Somebody, whether it's Tim Drake, whether it's Jason Todd, whether it's Batgirl, all of them are essentially getting their one-shot issue to try and pull Bruce out of this hole that he's made for himself since Damian died. And the important consistent part is that none of them even come close to succeeding.
Right.
And each one is sadder than the next. Maybe not. The silent one will always be the saddest. But, you know, each one is sad in their own way, whether it's a breakdown, whether it's, you know, a violent reaction, whatever it is, they're all like that. And they all leave you feeling like, ugh. So I was expecting that from this book as well, because everyone was saying the same thing. Oh, man, so sad. Oh, I'm crying, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't get that from this book. This book was the closure for all of it. And I'm surprised that more people didn't react that way. Basically, the gist of it is this. Batman has reached the point where he is so far in this hole that and fans of Batman Incorporated pre-New 52 will recognize Internet 3.0. It was an invention of Wayne Tech that was really also an extension of Batman Incorporated that was an immersive internet experience, basically virtual reality, for lack of a better term. And it's Wayne Tech, he has it still, and he has for 4 days straight been repeating the death of Damian over and over again to prove that he could have saved him. And for 4 days straight, he's lost every single time. He's been watching his son die for 4 days straight. And Alfred, broken down, calls Dick and tells him, "You got to come here. You got to." He's doing crazy shit in the Batcave again. No, and he won't listen to anyone like he'll listen to you. So Dick shows up, and you expect him to have this, you know, you can't do this. And Dick sits down and grabs another headset and goes, "Does this have two player?" And you're like, okay. And he jumps in, and they do it again. And this, and of course, for Dick, you have, people forget, yes, this was hard on Bruce, but no one was closer to Damian than Dick Grayson, not even Bruce Wayne. You know, that was mm-hmm. that was his brother. You know, that was, they were the best. And so the story continues, and it eventually wraps up with him very much giving him the what's what. And you think that that's going to be the extent of it, and it's not. The final story of this story, it's really kind of two parts, is that you see at the end that Alfred is also putting himself through this. But Alfred obviously isn't going to fight alongside them. Alfred is just replaying the time he let him leave the cave and he never came back.
Gotcha.
And that is where the feels hit. And but it's not the super sad feels that everyone really seemed to think. Bruce sees him doing this, and they have this moment where Bruce realizes he's not the only person who buried a son. And it's the final closure you need from it. That being said, I hope we're done with this now. I still miss Damian like he's a person that I lost in my life, and I want nothing more than for him to come back, but it's obviously not going to happen anytime soon, and it's time to move on from this. Not that it can ever go away, but it is time for whatever comes next, and I really like how they've done this, and I look forward to reading this all again one day in one sitting and seeing probably one of the best send-offs of a dead character ever. This is right up there with Fallen Hero when Cap died. This wow. is that kind of a send-off.
All right. Well, I didn't read it, but sounds touching.
I'll tell you this much, even not being emotionally invested in Damien's death in any way, shape, or form, if anything, you cheer it. If you have any feels for Alfred as a character, this one will really get you.
I might pick it up. I got out of the Batman and Robin series right after, I guess, I don't know, two or three issues ago. I just got tired of it and just sticking with the straight Batman title. Right. But I might pick this one up as a one-shot. Everyone did seem to really like this issue, so I'll give it a read.
You won't regret it.
All right.
All right, what do you have that made you happy?
Well, I want to take a minute and credit Jason Latour for doing something I never thought would be possible, making me like the Silver Surfer. So as part of the Infinity Number One digital download, you get this book for free, and this is what I was referring to earlier in the podcast. I believe you can buy it separately for $1.99 as well. And what I'm talking about is Infinity Against the Tide Number One. This is what I want in an event tie-in. A book that you don't have to buy to follow the main arc, that doesn't invade other ongoing series, but gives depth and texture to the event on a purely voluntary basis. This is all about the builders raising a Skrull planet. And it's probably the first time the Skrulls are giving any sense of humanity. And you can actually sympathize with them. It was sad, really, what was going on. You really felt for them. And it was, again, a credit to the writing, which was amazing. But more surprisingly is how freaking stupendous it is having Silver Surfer narrate this story. And not only narrating it, but kicking some serious ass. Augustine Alessio's artwork and the digital infinite format really drove this home.
Oh yeah.
It was absolutely gorgeous, and he really uses the infinite format to the fullest, allowing for some really impactful visuals. You know, we talked last week about Infinity, how it's going to impact the universe. We talked about it tonight, and this is a great example. You're given a really interesting story that's connected to, but not directly involved in the action. If you've never read an Infinite comic either, you need to check this out. It's my favorite book of the last 2 weeks, hands down. It was amazing. And for $2, come on, $2. And great one shot that, again, even if you're not reading Infinity, it's just a cool goddamn story. It's awesome.
Yeah, it really was. That's all there is to it. It was just Silver Surfer being rad. Not, no pun intended.
Oh my God, I hate that character. He's just so stupid. But I mean, it's a testament to any character when you put him in the hands of a really good writer, the suspension of disbelief really kicks in. At no point did I see him on a surfboard and think, oh, this is so stupid. God damn you, Stan Lee. Which is what I usually think every time I see the Silver Surfer. I'm like, this is, I can't get over the fact. I can accept the fact he's silver, liquid Terminator 2 metal. I can accept the fact that he's the herald of Galactus, who really is just a giant. You know, looks like a dude with a big pointy Kirby-esque helmet on him. I can get over all that. I can get over the fact that, you know, he points Galactus to worlds he's going to eat. Yep, I'm all right with that. You put him on a surfboard and I immediately check out. Like, I can't handle it. But this time I was in. It reminded me almost of, I don't know if you ever read Justice League Rock of Ages, Grant Morrison's, it's like a 6-part series. But yeah. In it, one of the issues has Death the Black Racer in it, which is DC's version of the stupidest character ever. It's a dude who's one of the new gods who flies through infinity on skis. I mean, and he's Death. Like, he is the embodiment of Death, and he's on skis. And it's ridiculous.
Does he have poles, too?
Yes, he does. If you've never seen this, oh my God, go on the internet and look up Death the Black Racer. It's just crazy. It was, I think Kirby was, you know, Jack Kirby, you know, was smoking some craziness in his cigars that day when he came up with that guy. Man, stupid character, never could take him seriously.
Gee, I can't imagine why.
But in that one story, when Grant Morrison wrote it, holy crap, you were in. You were like, this is plausible, and that guy is cool as crap. And that's exactly how I felt when I read
it. Those are really nice skis.
Yeah, I didn't even see the skis. Just like I didn't see the surfboard. Well, I saw the surfboard when he cut a dude in two with it, yep. Which was amazeballs. So anyway, enough raving about it. Infinity Against the Tide, number one. Pick it up, because, man, it was good.
And it's just another example, man, that this is eventually the kind of format we have for comics. If it goes to this, the interactiveness, just the way the panels work, it really is the next evolution. It's where we are headed. I don't know when it will happen, but it's so great.
I mean, I know print books are never going to go away, and no. I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
and I don't need every book to be an infinite format digital book, but when they do come out, and they're done this well, it just adds an amazing new layer of texture and quality to the book. And you couldn't have done this anywhere near as profoundly in print.
Yeah.
It would not have worked the same.
No, it would have been a different comic.
This was just, man, stop sleeping on this one. Don't let Silver Surfer detract from the fact that this is an amazing book.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that wraps it up, comic nerds. Thanks so much for listening and supporting the show. Tyler and I truly appreciate all the tweets and comments. That being said, make sure you're following us on Twitter. I can be found at The Mighty Jerd, and my cohort Tyler can be reached at...
Oh, Batman Inc. BP.
All right. While you're at it, make sure you're constantly availing yourself of all the geeky news and articles on geeklegacy.com. Check out all the other great podcasts happening in the Geek Legacy podosphere. Every Tuesday, David, Justin, Randy and Amanda get together to recap the week in geeky news and happenings. Plus, we have Stephen James's Pixelated podcast dedicated to video game stuff. So check them out and give them some loving too. That being said, we'll see you all in 2 weeks. Go read some comic books.
Read them.